This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte Mecklenburg School Superintendent Ann Clark spent months working on a student assignment plan to balance out school populations and to break up pockets of extreme poverty that tend to disadvantage those who already face enormous obstacles to success. School board members and parents have been studying it, commenting on it, suggesting changes, and tonight the school board will vote on the plan. Because it is so complex with so many moving parts, and because no one really understands the complexities better than the person who designed it, we've invited Ann Clark to join us for the hour to share her thought process and her vision. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you for being here. A little bit later on in the show, we'll also hear from two school board members, Eric Davis and Chairwoman Mary McCray, and we know you probably have a slew of questions and comments, so please feel free to share them with us. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. You can search for us on Facebook at WFAE, or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks right now. You have spent your entire career not only in education, but here in Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. You started in 1983, you just told me.
That's correct.
And you've never left the district your whole career. When you were 20 years old and getting out of college and getting ready to become, I guess, a teacher, Could you have imagined not only the fact that you're superintendent, but what public schools and superintendents and principals and educators in general today are called on to do in the public schools?
Well, first of all, I never imagined I would be the superintendent in 1983 when I started teaching at Devonshire Elementary. And certainly I feel like over the 34 years that I've been in CMS, I've seen our city change, our county, our community. And 17 years in the district office, you would think, would have prepared me, and it has, to step into the role of superintendent. But the complexity of the job, the micropolitical, and the need to keep a laser-like focused on the why, which I think is what has sustained me in the role for the last 2.5 years, is just I have real clarity around why I am committed to public education. And so that grounds me in a way that I think is helpful.
So many people today are not committed to public education. Why are you?
Well, I just believe deeply in public education. My background is in special education. I had an older brother with special needs. So I come at the work of leading a school district with the individual student in mind.
Do you understand the negative pushback against public education that's coming from some quarters?
I certainly do. I mean, as an educator, I also believe in choice. I believe that parents should have choices. I believe and want that first choice to be the public education system, but I think choice makes all of us better.
So let's talk about the plan. I could talk about your career, et cetera, for about forever, but we'll talk about the plan. You know how emotional, because you spent your entire career in all of this, how emotional parents get and students get and some teachers get when changes are made to boundary areas and students have to move from one school to another because of plans like this. And CMS engages in this exercise, I think, about every 6 years, right?
That's correct.
So what has the process been like for you? This seems to be particularly emotional this time around.
Well, I've had an opportunity. 34 years in the district allows you to see a number of different student assignment review processes occur. What I think has been particularly strong about this effort is that we started with board policy and we started with community engagement. You know, in January of 2016, 27,000 people weighed in surveys around what was important to them as we thought about how students should be assigned to schools. And so I think after that, the board worked on its policies and its goals and guiding principles. Again, a very public process and an opportunity for folks to engage. Now, when the community is hearing the board talk about goals and guiding principles, it doesn't feel personal yet because you're not talking about my kid and any impact, and I certainly get that. But our community has known since January of 2016 that this review was underway. It's been a very public process, all of the policy committee meetings televised. So there's been a huge opportunity for people to understand why we were doing student assignment and what the goals were.
Why do we keep doing it? I understand why we're doing this one, because we've talked about it ad nauseum on this program. But why do we keep doing it? Because so many decisions that people make in their personal lives are predicated on where their child is going to go to school. You buy a house because you want your child to go through these three schools. and now things change. Why do we keep changing?
Well, one of the things that I think our board did respond to a number of years ago is trying not to have constant churn in terms of changing of schools, where there was a period of time there in the early 2000s where there was just repeated change. And I think that's when the board said we need to do a comprehensive review every 6 years. And unless we're opening a new school, which obviously people understand you have to have change when you right. populate a new school, let's not be having this constant reactive churn of change, because it is destabilizing to families. Because you're right, Mike. Folks buy a house based on the pathway their child will have through the public school system. And so I certainly, of all people, appreciated that, having either taught, led, or served in almost every zip code in Mecklenburg County over my 34-year career. So I absolutely get that. And so I think the opportunity really is to be thoughtful every 6 years and say, are we good mm-hmm. with how we're assigning students to schools, and what is our goal? And I think that's the work the Board of Education did exceedingly well. They made it very clear to the community what the goals were. They wanted to preserve and expand what's working. And I think people hear preserve, but they don't hear expand sometimes. So it's preserve and expand what's working. But on the other side, the other guardrail for me as superintendent to craft a plan was reduce concentrations of poverty. Obviously maintain efficiencies, give equitable choice and access to our magnet programs. I mean, there were other goals, but those were the two guardrails that we've been working between since last April. So for an entire year, our community has known those were going to be goals that the board was expecting me to deliver on when I brought a plan in April. Again, in January of 2016, the timeline called for a vote tonight. So again, no secret, no surprise that the timeline call for us to vote tonight.
Yeah, but some have, and that timeline's been published for a long time, but some people have called for a delay on this vote. I don't know whether they just want to delay it because they don't want it to happen, but it has to happen, or they want to delay it because they want your successor, Clayton Wilcox, to be at the helm when this thing goes through. And he has said, I don't want to delay this vote. How closely have the two of you worked together on this?
Well, first of all, let me just say that Clayton was hired knowing what the goals and guiding principles were that the board had approved last April. So before he ever applied to CMS, he understood the board's priorities. They were clear the board had approved it. And since his appointment, and particularly since he arrived here in late March, he's been a part of briefings and attended community engagement. We have regular conversations as recently as yesterday. He's been involved in meetings with the chair and vice chair with me, tremendously engaged. And you're correct. He's been very clear that he owns the execution and is prepared to do that with a great team that he will assemble in the coming weeks. But we need to move on to that implementation phase. And the good news, if there is a parent can think about it, is we're not talking about August of 2017. The earliest any of these changes would take effect would be the 2018-19 school year. So we have 14 months mm-hmm. to execute exceedingly well. And in some cases, there is a delay till the 2019-20 school year. So there is an opportunity for incredibly thorough planning, and also an opportunity for our families to participate in that, to give feedback. You know, we have some paired schools that are a part of the recommendations. We've already had school leadership teams at one of our paired schools get together and advance a comprehensive plan to the district of, you know, things that they're going to need and recommendations they have. And that's what we want to have happen over the next 14 months.
I want to point out something you said before we got on the air, that you have no ego attached, you said, to the plan that you initially presented to the board, and that you knew that there would be changes to it because you really wanted, and the board wanted, an open process where they would actually listen to people, not just pay lip service to listening, so that the plan has now been adapted and changed. And there was an article in the paper this morning by Andos Helms about you particularly heard comments about these paired schools, which has made some parents very happy because their comments were listened to. Other parents are not so happy because they feel as though, if I understand this article correctly, they feel as though there's not enough time for them now to digest these parental suggestions before the vote tonight. But you have listened, and you said to me before we started that the plan that will go to the vote tonight is now better than the one you initially presented.
And I would have expected that. I mean, obviously, I put my best thinking and the team's best thinking that was influenced by tremendous community engagement before we ever got to April 25th. But I expected the plan to get better with community input. And either we're going to listen to feedback or we're not. And I wasn't going to pretend that we were going to listen and not really change anything. I feel very good about the changes that have come forward from community engagement. We've had staff ask great questions, principals make good suggestions and give thoughtful feedback, and obviously our parents have weighed in. And so that's what I will deliver tonight is an amended plan that is a stronger plan for students. And at some point, you have to vote. You have to vote, and you have to move forward. And, you know, I've, as recently as Friday, received feedback from one of our communities that recently realized they were impacted. And over the weekend, our team worked and delivered on some of the recommendations from that parent group. So this has been such an iterative process. And I think if people can step back and look at what's recommended tonight, they will see their fingerprint on much of it. Have we accepted every recommendation? Absolutely not. Have we weighed and considered every recommendation that's come from a parent? Absolutely yes. So 100% of families will not be happy at the end of tonight. But at the end of tonight, there are incredible opportunities for thousands of kids in this community that are not in play today.
Which leads me to Raina's question. She emails, how can CMS guarantee that the student reassignment plan will go into effect as planned when the parents have the deciding factor of which schools their students attend? I'm not sure I understand that question. Do you?
Well, certainly parents have choices, as we talked about at the beginning of the hour. And, you know, if parents are not happy with the board vote tonight, they have choices they can make. They have choices they can make for other magnet schools in CMS. Requests for transfers, they can obviously look at schools outside of CMS. So obviously our recommendations are predicated on the commitment of our CMS families to understand and be willing to commit and roll up their sleeves and make the new school configurations work. And many emails that I've received have said that. As recently as last night, I got an email from a former student of mine at AG who is impacted by one of the later changes we've made in the last few days. And it was just heartwarming for me to hear her say, while I'm impacted, you can count on me, Ms. Clark, to roll up my sleeves, and we're going to make this work. And so that's what we're counting on, Mike, as we go into tonight, is that there, our families at the end of the day are going to be committed to make this work. And I realize there will be some that are going to be disappointed and will make choices to leave CMS. That's certainly not a goal that we have. We want to keep our parents that are committed and doing great things in our schools.
Before I share some more of these emails that are coming in as we speak here, do you think, you mentioned that the primary goal in all this was to break up pockets of extreme poverty. I only have 30 seconds here, but do you think that this plan that you are presenting tonight, that will be voted on tonight, achieves that?
Well, and I wouldn't say that was the primary goal. The board had five goals that they wanted to be applied equally. But what I will say is the plan in its totality is an incredibly important step for our community in response to a challenge by the Opportunity Task Force for our board to be courageous. And we are the first agency stepping out in response to that task force.
Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools Superintendent Ann Clark is our guest. We'll be joined by several school board members in a little while, but we're going to come back with more of our conversation with Ann in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and NC Warn, working to slow climate change by curbing methane emissions from the fracked gas and power industries. Information on clean energy alternatives at ncwarn.org. And Theater Charlotte presenting Memphis, a musical about a 1950s white DJ who falls in love with rock and roll and an African-American singer. Now through May 28th, tickets at carolinatix.org. Well, the school board, as we all know, votes tonight on the student assignment plan. We'll catch you up on their decision tomorrow morning, and then an update on gangs in Charlotte. Vanloads of suspected gang members pulled up to Charlotte's federal courthouse last week as part of a roundup, which put the spotlight back on these groups. Though roundups occurred elsewhere, this state and this city were the focus. And we hear from law enforcement about the depth of the gang problem here tomorrow on this program at 9. If you'd like to join our program today, now's the time. Email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or get to us through Twitter at charlottetalks.
I'm Jessica Yellen. Coming up on the next On Point, the president's budget is out. Though the rollout is quiet, the impacts would be huge. $800 billion slashed from Medicaid for starters. We'll take a look. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join On Point from 10 to noon following Charlotte Talks here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, superintendent of schools. Ann Clark is with us today. We'll soon be joined by a couple of school board members, including the school board chair. I want to get back to these extreme pockets of poverty, because that was one of the major goals here, is to break that up, because those kids are already disadvantaged and evidently attending these schools where they are all of their peers are extremely disadvantaged, gives them yet another challenge to face. They're already having enough difficulties. Why? Why is that? If you have a good teacher in the classroom and you have a good principal at the head of the school, why does it matter that everybody there is poor or everybody there is affluent?
Well, I think having been a teacher and a principal at all three levels, what I would say, Mike, and I want to make sure it's very clear to our community that there is not a belief in our school system that our students that come from poverty and high need aren't just as academically capable as any other student in our district.
Are we paying attention to them? Because there's a series of articles in the News and Observer and the Observer here in Charlotte this week about some of these kids who are gifted but poor being overlooked.
Right. So, but what I would say is the reason, to answer your original question, is that with the belief that every kid has a capability, mm-hmm. The conditions in a school that's 96% poverty, which is one of the schools that we're pairing, Billingsville Elementary, is 96% poverty. And so the staff at that school are greeted every day with children that may have slept in the back seat of the car, whose medical home is the emergency room, who haven't had a meal since they had lunch the previous day. So it is a set of conditions that, when highly concentrated, require a staff to be focused on those social, emotional, medical, mental health needs of students in such high concentration that the opportunity to be focused on teaching a kid to read is more limited. It doesn't mean we don't have great teachers in those schools and great leadership. We do. But the overwhelming condition, we have 77 schools in our community of Mecklenburg County that have 70% or higher poverty.
77 out of how many?
Out of 170.
Wow. There has been some criticism levied that this plan ultimately does not achieve very much in terms of breaking up pockets of poverty. Would you agree or disagree with that?
If you look at both Phase 1 and Phase 2, we have 74 schools out of 170 who have had a positive impact on their socioeconomic status, whether that was high or low. And so 74 schools, and that includes Phase 1, where we focused on our magnet and school choice options, and this Phase 2 work, where we impacted 21 schools of the 74.
Would you like to have been able to do more?
Absolutely.
Will that go forward under your successor, you think?
Well, certainly as a part of the board's policy and regulation, we call for a review every 6 years. I think we also have a four-year plan for rolling out more partial magnets and more choice options. And I think with that work still in play for the next 3 years, we will continue to see significant improvements in the levels of poverty in our school.
Jenny emails, "We will not let our son, who is currently at Dilworth Elementary, continue on to Sedgefield Middle School as the first guinea pig class in your socioeconomic experiment. Do you realize that there will be many families, hold on, my screen is being drawn on, there will be many families that will not embrace your change and will leave CMS altogether. Our public school system will suffer in the city as it does in other cities because many families will choose the charter and private school option."
Certainly our hope is that we don't lose any of our CMS families, but we do at the end of the day respect the fact that parents make the final choice of where their students go to school. I also think there will be a number of families that will choose to reconnect with CMS because of our recommendations. So I think there's an opportunity to gain families who we've lost support from in the past that have their kids in private, parochial, or charter schools. So based on the emails I've received, there are a number of families that are excited about reengaging with CMS because of the recommendations we've made.
Jenny, the emailer, sounds very much like Scott Stone, the state representative who ran for mayor here in Charlotte at least once, maybe twice. You were accused by him, Scott Stone, of legacy building, doing so through this assignment plan, which he says engages in social engineering, and he accused you of trying to push through a controversial political agenda. How would you respond to that?
Well, certainly, as superintendent, I'm not political and I'm not elected, and my role is clear. And I'll go back to what I said a few minutes ago. I have clarity of purpose of why I get up every day and why I'm committed to public education and the best opportunities for every single kid in this system. So the board set the goals and guiding principles for student assignment. The staff is responsible for delivering a plan that lives up to those goals. And when our community looks at the boundary changes I recommended, they will see that I adhered to those goals and guiding principles and the criteria the board asked me to look at very thoughtfully. What I would also say, Mike, is that this has been done with incredible thoughtfulness, care, and intentionality. Unlike other superintendents, I'm not leaving Charlotte. I'm not getting on a jet plane to another district. This is my home. This is where I plan to spend the rest of my life. I'm deeply committed to this district and this community. So this has not been done in any other way other than with great care, and certainly not with a political agenda.
Social engineering is a buzzword that the right likes to use, and it may have some accuracy to it, because haven't the public schools here and around the country been asked to solve many of society's problems, as opposed to simply being a place where kids go to learn? We're breaking up segregation, we're breaking up pockets of poverty, we're asking the schools to be parents, we're asking the schools to feed these kids because it's the only place they get food. Are we asking too much? Has the public school system reached a point where we really are involved in social engineering to the detriment of education?
I wouldn't describe what you just described as social engineering. I would say that's doing our job to meet the needs of students as they cross our threshold every day. What I do see is an opportunity for this community to respond to what the district is doing in terms of looking at things like affordable housing, workforce housing, you know, how we're thinking about zoning of neighborhoods.
But aren't you stepping in and trying to salve the failures of society at large? And government at large in supplying affordable housing, in giving workforce housing spread throughout an area so it's not highly concentrated in terms of poverty or wealth. That hasn't happened. It doesn't seem to look like it's going to happen, but you have to pick up the slack.
Well, certainly if I'm going to teach a kid to read and they have a toothache because they've never been to the dentist, I, as an educator, know that I have to work with community agencies to get that student the dental care so that he has a fair opportunity be a successful student in the classroom. So you're correct. We end up brokering a lot of services for students beyond academics, but it's all toward the focus of helping a kid be successful in the classroom. And if there are barriers, I can't ignore those barriers.
Right.
If our community isn't able to address those barriers, then if that's going to help a student read, absolutely.
Is part of the problem that although we call ourselves a community, we are not?
I think over the last year we've seen that our community is not unified. I think there is beginning to be a rallying cry for that to happen, and I hope that student assignment is a first step toward being solution-oriented rather than problem-pointing, which I think is maybe where we've been in recent months.
Let me bring in a couple of other people here who are heavily involved in this and have been for years. We're joined now by Mary McCray, who's the chairwoman of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board, and Eric Davis, who represents District 5, which includes Cotswold Elementary, one of the schools that may merge as a result of this vote tonight. Welcome back to both of you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Let's talk a second about past realignments, because in the past, the West Side, Mary, felt that they took the brunt of those plans. Did you consider that, and will you consider that tonight as you vote? Will they be taking the brunt of this plan, or is the pain spread?
Well, let me say, I think, essentially, from past board things that they has that has happened, the West Side has that tendency to feel like they did take the brunt, and in a sense they did, Mike, because a lot of the schools that were closed and consolidated and those middle school kids placed on elementary campuses did occur there, and that's a reality. I think as I wanted to be on this board, one of the things that I wanted to do was to sort of right that wrong. And I can say that has that wrong been totally righted? No, because we still have a lot of children sitting in those buildings who are not working up to their potential, who in some sense we are still not giving them all of the advantages that a normal middle school kid might have. So I think we're taking a step to correct that right. Even though it appears that this happened overnight to those students, us writing it has been much more difficult than we thought it would ever be, at least my thinking would ever be.
And you've been...
We still haven't gotten the funding that we sorely need to start writing that ship.
As I understand it from people who follow this every day, in other words, our reporters, you've been fairly quiet about this plan. Where do you stand on it right now, and is this what you envisioned? Is it what you wanted?
Well, no, it is not what I really envisioned, but I do understand it. I've been quiet because I've been trying to listen to my district reps. These are the persons that who are right there in the trenches listening to all of their constituents and weighing all of the various options. So sometimes as a leader, you can't just step out there. You have to listen first and then understand the situation. And so that's what I've really been doing. So if my being quiet, you know, has caused some consternation, I apologize for that, but I do try to listen. And I'm still sort of up in the air when it comes to the formation of a lot of partial magnets. And I think back on our history with partial magnets. And so I am going to trust that Ms. Craven Howell, who has said that we're going to make these partials work, is going to roll up our, we're going to roll up our sleeves and do whatever we can as a board to ensure that these partials work. And my consternation might come from the fact that just because you put a partial magnet into a high-poverty school, it does not make people come. They have to see results in order for them to come. And I don't know, sometimes some of our children don't have time for those results. And I know we highlight the partial magnets that we do have that are showing results, but we got to look at how long it has taken for those magnets to get to that place where they are showing those results and what they had to go through. So that's my concern with the partial magnet.
Okay. One of the district people that you've been listening to is Eric Davis, who is with us from District 5, and he's a former school board chair himself. I know that you are in the Cotswold area. You represent the Cotswold area, and that's one of those paired school areas where evidently parents have been pretty cooperative. The Cotswold and Billingsville pairing, those parents have been fairly cooperative in this effort, right?
I have been overwhelmed with the response in Cotswold and Billingsville. Initially, there was a lot of shock, a lot of concern, quite a bit of pushback. But and there is still concern in Cotswold and Billingsville about this plan. But in relative terms, Cotswold and Billingsville.
What's the basis of the concern?
Well, it's disruptive. So
Any change is disruptive.
I'm used to my child going to the same school for 6 years.
Yeah.
Now my child will go to a different school
for three years. Let's take the cosmetics off. Is it more than that?
Well, for some parents it is, yes. But let me go to a different place. For at least the 7 years I've been on the board, another part of District 5, Montclair, Pinewood, and Sedgefield, has been petitioning the board for a better assignment, an assignment that does not cause them to have to go up to 10 miles to high school.
Right.
And those parents have been patient. They have been thoughtful. They have endured. And I'm excited about an opportunity now to respond to those parents' request, and not only to respond, but to build stronger feeder schools to Myers Park High School. Every one of the student assignment proposals in District 5 that I'm working on involve Myers Park High School. And it's my belief that if the proposals as currently presented are accepted by the board, they will result in a stronger Myers Park High School, of which we will all benefit.
Okay. Liz emails, Sedgefield has a neighborhood school that its neighborhood has chosen not to support. Why then should the Myers Park neighborhood have to uplift it rather than getting their own neighborhood school? Myers Park has a history of uplifting schools, Eastover, Dilworth. Isn't it time for us to come home?
Yeah, so I do agree with that perspective in that 7 years ago, Eastover was so successful it had outgrown its boundaries, and Eastover included Myers Park neighborhood families. And so the concern was, oh, you're diluting our success. Well, here we are 7 years later, and that success has not been diluted. It's multiplied into another school, Dilworth, which includes Myers Park neighborhood parents. This is an opportunity to continue that success and to expand the strong school network further out. It's been contracting. At-risk neighborhoods have been increasing, and they have been pushing in. This is a chance to push out and to strengthen our city as a whole.
And Clark, talk to me about the impact to the students involved in all of this. When you combine, when you bring in students who have been historically in economic poverty pockets, and you spread them out through a system where they're in relationships with more affluent students, do the grades for the more affluent students tend to fall in those situations, or do all boats rise, or do we know?
Well, certainly I can tell you from 6 years that I spent at Alexander Graham Middle School that I certainly saw all of our students thrive in that particular situation, in the classroom and outside the classroom.
Why does that happen?
Well, there's still an ability for a school to meet the individual needs of students, particularly at middle and high school. Students sign up for courses based on their readiness to take on that next level of challenge and rigor. And so there's an opportunity for kids to move at whatever pace they're ready and able to do. At our elementary schools, our teachers are already grouping our students and regrouping them throughout the day. So in my mind and in my experience, I've been at Shamrock Gardens when I was in a paired school situation, leading a K-3 school that moved on to a 4-6 school. I've been at Alexander Graham when we had incredible diversity of socioeconomic status in that school, and it was, by everyone's count, an extraordinary school.
Ann Clark is the superintendent of schools. She's here with Eric Davis, who represents District 5 on the school board, and Mary McCray is joining us by phone. She's the chairwoman of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board. They vote tonight on the student assignment plan, and we will continue our conversation in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the North Carolina Museum of Art, presenting Glory of Venice, masterworks from the Italian Renaissance that changed the course of painting forever, closing June 18th. Details at ncartmuseum.org. And Jesse Brown's, a specialty outfitter offering clothing, gear, and accessories for outdoor adventures or casual trips around town, located at Sharon Corners at South Park. More info at jessebrowns.com. President Trump rolls out a budget that would cut deeply into the social safety net programs, from food stamps to health care for the poor and disability payments. But the president's plan would boost military spending and cut taxes, while promising economic growth that experts say is wildly optimistic. They'll be talking about that in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock during On Point right here on WFAE. We talk more about the school board and the student assignment plan coming right up.
The center of a story. Not so easy to find when things move quickly.
President Trump will sign an executive order
tomorrow. Came up in a car, shot at police.
This weapon was aimed at a network.
There will not be a government shutdown because everyone...
Every day, rely on NPR to find the person and ideas at the center of the story so you can understand what's happening and what it means to you. Stand with the facts. Listen every day.
On air at 90.7 WFAE and online at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Ann Clark, Superintendent of Education for CMS, is in our Spirit Square studio along with Eric Davis, who represents District 5, and Mary McCray, the chairwoman of the Charlotte Mecklenburg School Board, joins us by phone. You wanted to chime in on this, Eric, a minute ago when we were talking about how the impact of bringing lower socioeconomic children into an environment where they're mixed in with more affluent students. And studies have shown, if I'm not mistaken here, that grades don't go down for the more affluent students, but they do rise for the less affluent students. But you hold, the board holds principals and the superintendent accountable for this?
Absolutely. We hold the superintendent accountable as our employee, and then the superintendent holds principals accountable. And one of the ways that we quantifiably hold the superintendent accountable is not just based on the grade level proficiency of our students, but on the amount of academic growth that our students experience year over year. And that accountability is regardless of whether a child is behind or ahead of grade level. Mm-hmm. We expect our teachers to move every child at least 1 year so we can take an individual focus on a child and teacher and a school-wide focus. And in fact, that focus on growth pioneered by a superintendent like Ann Clark is what has enabled Charlotte Mecklenburg schools to exceed the performance of every other district in North Carolina, including Wake, and is a key part of making sure that this plan works.
People don't tend to focus on this, and maybe they don't believe it, but Charlotte Mecklenburg schools have a great reputation nationally. Is it? You've been here a long time. You're the outgoing superintendent. You've got nothing to lose by being honest. Is that reputation deserved, and are we great in a national perspective because the public schools nationally are so awful that anything that sticks slightly above the norm is going to be considered great?
Well, we certainly do enjoy a great national reputation, but I would say we enjoy an extraordinary one in the state of North Carolina. I go to meetings with other superintendents, and the first thing they're asking once the test results came out this fall, what in the world are y'all doing in Charlotte? That's the question.
And what are we doing?
So I think, and let me also be clear, we got plenty of work left to do. So I need to acknowledge that we don't have all of our students where they need to be in terms of proficiency or higher and being on grade level or higher. So I don't want to pretend that we don't have plenty of work as a community to do to support our kids in being ready for life after they graduate from CMS. But we have had a laser-like focus on literacy. We've gotten our whole community engaged in that focus. And so what I've learned in 35 years is that when you have a focus, you align all of your people, your time, and your resources around that focus, great things happen. We've seen it happen with graduation rate. We're seeing it happen with our literacy scores, and our kids are beginning testing this week. I was in a school this morning with a student that I've been working with for the last year, and there's lots of optimism in the air with teachers that are so excited for what their kids are going to show us. So stay tuned for more good news from CMS.
Mary McCray, this plan that you're voting on tonight has been characterized by some as being conservative, despite all the turmoil here. It's been called conservative, and yet Scott Stone, the state House member who has some negative things to say about this, has described it as snow globe management, that you're shaking it up and not fixing the problem. In your view, are we just shuffling the deck here, rearranging the chairs on the Titanic as it sinks, or is this going to accomplish something substantive?
Well, Mike, I've heard that myself also, and you know, it's great that a conservative would call our plan conservative. So I guess that's a plus for us.
I'm not sure that he characterized. I think hold on. I think parents and some administrators have called this conservative, not Scott Stone. But go ahead.
Okay, it is rather conservative when you consider the amount of needs that we have here in this district. And I heard Ann say that, you know, we are touching with phase one and phase two, 74 out of our 170 schools. So basically that amounts to about 43% of our district that is getting a pinprick or finger pointed or whatever we want to call it as to what's happening here. And then when you look at the amount of poverty we have, which really comes in about 45%, because it's 77 schools out of 170, the needs are still much greater than what we're actually touching. So in a sense, it is a conservative start. I would consider at least 50%, you know, at a range where we could be making the most impact. And we still have a lot of schools that we're projecting out that they are going to be impacted. So we can't actually say that those schools are going to have the impact, and that's because those are the projected magnet programs, that the partial magnets that we're putting into some of our high-need schools, and just hoping that, you know, the families are going to come and, you know, those schools are going to take off. So, in a sense, we are projecting. And so I hope that our projections play out. And my question has always been, what happens when those projections don't play out? Do we have a backup plan? And I'm yet to hear that. So...
And from whom would you want to hear that backup plan? From the superintendent?
Well,
from...
I asked it during the work session. You know, when we were talking about the algorithms as to how we get these projected numbers that's going to show up into these programs. And so when I asked Mr. Keisha Craven Howell and Scott McCulley, you know, they're saying that, you know, we will go back to the drawing board and rework the algorithm and try to, you know, you just as whenever a parent gets that second chance to go through the lottery process. So that's what they were speaking of. Then we'll put it back out there and hope that people will take us up on it.
So Representative Stone wants to delay this vote, and you explained, Eric Davis, the last time you were on this program, and you explained to parents in sessions who also wanted to delay this vote why this can't be delayed and why it shouldn't be delayed, because it's going to cost us money and it impacts the bonds, which will fund future educational projects around the area. James Ford, who's a former CMS teacher and State Teacher of the Year, wrote an op-ed piece for Charlotte Agenda based on his experience as a teacher. And this guy's a remarkable man. He is a remarkable man. He should still be in the classroom. What a great teacher he must have been. Anyway, based on his experience as a teacher, as a parent with two children at Moorhead STEM, and as the chair of the Leading on Opportunity Council, he says he joined others who feel that this plan doesn't reach the goal of breaking up pockets of extreme poverty, and wrote that he doesn't believe this plan will help shift the opportunity structure in our city. It's not the bold or visionary approach I was anticipating. And he went on to urge the board to delay the vote, commit to a more courageous plan, engage the community, and return to a vote together. I'd like to hear all three of you on this, Ann.
Well, certainly doing nothing is not courageous and doesn't create additional educational opportunities for our students. So I have never pretended that this was a transformational plan. I've been clear that it is an important and critical step that the district needs to take. But we have to be joined by other agencies and other nonprofits in our community for there to be a collective impact that can be realized for our children and families of poverty and huge needs. So the collective impact is our opportunity, and so I'm excited to see the city of Charlotte, our small towns, Mecklenburg County, many of our nonprofits, because what I've seen happen, and I think is evidenced in my recommendations, we aren't doing one thing to a school, we're doing several, and it is that collective impact that I believe will realize great opportunities for our kids, and so too for our community. So this is an important step. Doing nothing to me is not an option. That's not a response that I would be proud of as superintendent of this school district, for us to back away from 18 months of engagement with our community and not take this step. Will there be other steps? I certainly hope so. Will there be other agencies that will respond in kind to what their role can be around that economic mobility challenge that we all are concerned about in this community? Mm-hmm. But we've been talking about economic mobility for 2 years. This is an opportunity to say, okay, here's one step that the school district can take. And what are the next steps that need to domino from that? That, again, that collective impact is one that advances opportunities for our children in this community.
Eric.
So I have the utmost respect for James Ford. I served on the State Board of Education with James while he was our North Carolina Teacher of the Year. So I hold his opinion in high regard. I also am experiencing as the District 5 rep where arguably some of the most controversial parts of this plan are landing, that from the parents' perspective in District 5, this is not conservative at all. This is pretty aggressive because it's landing on their child and their schools and so forth. I would have hoped that we could have reached more schools, but I recognize the limited nature of student assignment and, frankly, it appears of our community's capacity to deal with change. So there's more work to do. But a lot of that work gets back to your earlier question. I believe that the school system does have to solve too many of the structural issues that our society brings to us every day in the form of students across our threshold. We need the city to step up on housing, on transportation, on public safety, on economic development. We need the county to step up on social, emotional, mental health services. We need the state of North Carolina to step up in support of our public schools with the funding that's necessary to pay our teachers what they are worth and to provide more resources to the citizens of North Carolina. That is what has made us a great state, and we have gone backwards in that regard over the last few years.
Mary McCray.
Mike, I wholeheartedly agree with both Ann and Eric. I think as a city, as a county, we tend to talk a good game here in Charlotte, but when it comes time to roll up your sleeve and get to work and be about this work, you start hearing, not in my backyard. So if we're going to be about equal opportunities for our children here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, it's got to occur in everybody's backyard. And we can't be shaking our heads when it comes time for your backyard to be dug up and you start saying, oh, not in mine. Everybody's got to be willing to put in if we want Charlotte to be this great beacon on a hill that we're always alluding to.
Couple of quick questions, which I think deserve quick answers because I don't want to spend a lot of time on them. And that is, could a delay be in the offing tonight?
So in my view, delay offers great risk of even more for the citizens who feel that the changes are already negatively impactful. A delay could create even more negatively impactful changes. A delay also, as mentioned before, puts our bond at risk. But even more, the most fundamental question we're faced with today is, how are you going to take care of my child? The sooner the board makes a vote, the sooner we get on with the detailed planning to demonstrate how we're going to take care of every
and
child.
And as I understand this, and though this may have changed a little bit since I read the articles about this, but as I understand it, Mary, all of the bullet point proposals in Ann Clark's plan will be voted on separately. So if you say yes to some and no to others, how does that impact the overall goal of the plan? How does that – what does that do to the plan?
We have – we have 32 recommendations, and I'll let Mary jump in here, but just first to be clear about how the vote will happen, we have packaged recommendations that have dependencies on each other. So there will be actually 14 official motions tonight that will include several recommendations each, so that we're not allowing one decision to preclude three more, or that if you make this decision, it is going to impact three more. So we have positioned those in such a way as to, you know, not have a huge impact in an unintended way.
Mary McCray?
Ann said it correctly. I sat last night going through them and bundling everything together that went together. So it was set on any particular one. And so that's why it's going to be, you know, imperative that board members understand that, you know, I'm not trying, you know, no one is trying to tell people how to vote, but you have to understand that with the bundle, and if you're going to vote no on something that's in that bundle, then it's not just going to be for that school. It's going to affect several other schools.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. Well, it's not a problem. It's a simpler way of doing this.
In 10 seconds, is the fact that this is a school board election, you're going to be in the backs of the minds of people voting tonight, Mary?
Mike, you know, as elected officials, we have to say yes.
Okay.
What, Mike?
Go ahead.
Not in mine.
Okay.
I know, Eric, but tell him why.
Because I hold the future of our children as the paramount issue, regardless of whether I'm running or not.
So I have 1 minute left, Ann Clark, and I may never speak to you again in an official capacity. What advice do you have for your successor, Clayton Wilcox, going forward?
To know that he's got a great team in place and is assembling and adding to that team, and to understand that this is a community that's committed once they're clear, you know, what the focus is and what the purpose is. And so to continue to engage our community and make clarity of our purpose clear. And I think he will find this community very supporting.
Haley Emails, as someone with children who are directly affected and who also knew Ann Clark personally, I want to say that I have the utmost faith in the superintendent and the plan that she will put to a vote tonight. What will you be doing on July 2nd?
That's a good question.
Hey.
I don't know.
Ann Clark, CMS superintendent, with Eric Davis from District 5 and Mary McCray, the chair of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board. Thank you all for the hour.